Welcome to another special episode of Atlanta's only pro-business radio talk show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Buckhead inside the Business Radio X studios.
All right, welcome to another special episode of Business Radio X. And this episode is our inaugural episode. Very excited to announce. We've been having this on the docket for a while. A lot of conversation and a lot of buzz about this show. It is FranchiseBusinessRadio.com. And actually, we have the owner of that website and the host of the show in the studio, which is a good thing if we're launching Franchise Business Radio. Pam, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Very excited.
All right. And Pam Curie, so we've known each other actually for a number of years, networked at a few events. You actually were on the show quite some time ago.
That's right.
As a guest.
Mm-hmm.
And fast forward, we had lunch over here in Buckhead, and who knew? Right?
Right. Who didn't know? You just never know where those lunch and conversations will lead you.
Very exciting. So so being this is the inaugural episode, you have some amazing guests in the studio. Actually, let's just say hi to our guests real quick and just good morning to them. We'll come back to you and kind of tee off the show and the bio. So joining us in the studio this morning is Jim Squire. Good morning.
Good morning, Rich.
How are you this morning?
Oh, fantastic.
And what will you be chatting about?
We'll be talking about franchising and in specific the Southeast Franchise Forum.
Okay. And also joining us in the studio is Lawrence Leopold. Lawrence, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. And you'll be chatting about?
Just SBA lending in general, the process, and just components of SBA lending in general.
Okay. And that's from the franchising, obviously, perspective, but the SBA. So you're an SBA guru?
Yes, something like that.
So, yes or yes. Yeah, just go ahead. Yeah. All right. And then Pete Dosick.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Fantastic.
And you'll be chatting with the audience about?
I'm an attorney, so I'll be talking about all the legal issues surrounding franchising.
Now, that's a great start to your first show. What a great roundup, and we'll be doing some roundtable discussion as well. So
absolutely.
All right, so Pam, so let's kind of introduce our audience to you just briefly, and then we'll kind of chat about the show and your mission and all that good stuff. So 20 years in franchising, traditional corporate America. You've acquired a business acumen from multiple perspectives of the franchise business model, starting at the franchise level, then as a franchisor, business support and trainer. And we're going to be talking about your training hat that you wear as well, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you've also, as a franchise, launched and a system developer of all, which included creating strategies for sales development, implementation of relevant training programs. Your experience puts you in the role of training other franchise advisors. So you're a trainer of the trainers. Is that true or true?
Yes, a trainer of other franchise advisors.
Okay, trainer of advisors.
I have done train the trainer before, but
okay,
yes.
Anything I say, just say yes or whatever.
Yes, yes, whatever. Right.
Then you can blame it on me, right?
Just you got to be sure to say yes and just not nod your head.
Oh, okay,
right?
Yeah.
We are on the radio.
Good point. It is radio, yeah. All right, it's funny. Some people hold up visual aids, and I'm like, all right. We do take a lot of pictures. But meanwhile, we got interrupted in your bio here. Yeah. We'll edit this later, yeah. All right, so but you're also providing assistance to franchisors on their recruitment strategy, new franchisees, consults on their training and development programs, and putting their them in a position of success, right?
Correct.
All right, so now Franchise Intellect. Tell us about this.
Yeah. Well, just sort of to elaborate on the bio and the and what is Franchise Intellect.
Right.
You know, it's my consulting practice. Okay. I founded Franchise Intellect. And really what we do is we focus on two key elements when we think about franchising. One key element is what you're referring to, and that's being that franchise advisor. In the easiest way to define it, franchisors lean on us to provide them with prospective franchisee candidates, and individuals lean on us to help them find the right franchise that matches their criteria and what they are looking for in a business. So basically that business matchmaker. So that's one key element of Franchise Intellect. But a second one goes with our tagline, right? Knowledge around franchising. A second key element is actually working with businesses and helping them around their training strategy. A very important component of a franchisor and developing their system is having a strong training and support program. So to be able to get in there, take a step back, do some analysis on, okay, how are you designing your training program? Who is our audience? How are we going to roll this out? And really putting some deep thought into their training program, the design of that program, the rollout of that program to ensure that the franchisor is being successful as well as the franchisees.
Well said. You're definitely an expert. And that's what, by the way, the X in Radio X stands for, is we seek experts in their industry and leaders. And you've certainly brought in a great team this morning. So, again, before you launch the show, tell us we're a little teaser for Franchise Business Radio, because, again, we're only doing this once as the inaugural episode, right? So what's the idea behind this, the mission, and what do you hope to accomplish over time with this platform?
Yeah, great question, and thanks for asking. This was a natural extension. By the way, my background is in communications, and but really just as an educator in the franchise industry, this was a natural extension. And the purpose of this platform is really to bring franchise professionals together as well as franchise resources together for the purpose of connecting, educating, and collaborating to service the franchise community as well as the franchise consumer.
Okay. I mean, just a great resource. So over time, we can, you know, these shows obviously will be produced in a podcast, will be archived, and what a great tool and a reference point for people from all the perspectives, not only the guests in our studio this morning, but as the show progresses as well. So, well, very excited once again for the inaugural episode, and let's get this show started. Right?
Absolutely. Let's get this show on the road.
Exactly. All right. So we're going to introduce our first guest, and I'll let you kind of take it from there and begin with some questions and finding a little bit more about our first guest, whom is Jim Squire, certified franchise executive. Executive Vice President and Chief Development Officer at Firestorm, overseeing franchise development and alternative channels expansion for the brand. Firestorm.
Yeah, exactly.
Franchise Storm. Does anybody have that one yet?
That works.
We're avoiding the franchise storm.
There you go. Nice. Yeah. We're trying to
unless
quiet
it's a perfect
it.
Storm.
There you go. Nice. Yeah. All right. All right. So meanwhile, back at Firestorm, as a national franchise company specializing in crisis management, Squire is also serves as president and CEO of Franchise Marketing Advisors, LLC, a broad-based franchise development consulting practice. Prior to Firestorm and FMA, Squire was a senior executive with such well-known franchise brands as Honey-Baked Great American Cookies, Arby's, Days Inn, and Howard Johnson. Passionate about franchising, Squire is involved in the following national franchise industry boards and committees. Founding chairman of the Board of Governors of Institute of Certified Franchise Executives, member of the Board of Trustees of the International Franchise Association Educational Foundation, and receipt of the foundation's highest honor, member of the IFA Franchise Forum and the Franchise Relations and Membership Committee, and former member of the IFA Board of Directors. On the local level, he serves as chairman of the Board of Directors of the Southeast Franchise Forum. Wow.
Ooh,
did you knock it out of the park with this one?
Yeah. It's amazing. You didn't even take a breath during all of that. So clearly you're the radio pro here today.
Well, I wanted to save every moment for y'all to have the conversation. So Pam, let's talk to our first guest.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. That's a mouthful. And believe it or not, we did not even scratch the surface.
Oh, yeah, that's just a teaser.
With Jim's experience and achievements. But before we get into franchising, Jim, one of the things I do want to ask you about, you shared with me that you have a little experience in radio.
Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, I wish there were visuals here because because they actually brought a promotion piece. Let me pass this on to Rich that shows you back in back many, many years ago when
day,
I was with the Good Timers, which was a contemporary radio station. And we had fun back then. This was in the days in which actually I had the opportunity to personally introduce great names like Chuck Berry and the Beatles actually came to Savannah where we were for a program, et cetera.
Oh, wow.
So it was a great time. The 60s, which was this time frame, was amazing at radio. So it was a great way to work your way through through college. And a great way to get dates.
Oh, yes.
Well, definitely
everyone
have
loves a radio personality.
It was the play Misty for me kind of situation.
Well, he definitely has the voice for radio, right? Wow.
Absolutely.
And I have to say very quickly, not to hijack your show here, but Pam, you must have started when you were six if you've been in this business for 20 years.
Why, thank you. I'm not giving away my age.
Okay. Six, I promise.
I always, you know, what I do is I say I have 10 plus years in traditional corporate America and 10 plus years in franchising. I'm just going to stay at the plus.
Plus,
yes.
That's good.
Because there's actually more years than that.
I understand.
Well, let's go ahead and get started. Obviously, we're here to discuss franchising, and you are the Executive VP and Chief Development Officer with a franchisor, Firestorm. Tell us a little bit about Firestorm.
Great. Very interesting brand. As you can see from my bio, historically I've been in the hospitality arena, whether it was hotels or for the better part of my career in the restaurant community. But Firestorm is what I would call a noble franchise, because Firestorm is involved in crisis management and business continuity planning, continuity of operations type of plan. So our franchisees work with typically the private sector, companies with 50 or more employees, oftentimes thousands of employees, and are able to put together plans that look at risk analysis and sort of do what-if scenarios in case there were certain events that would occur. We follow a mantra of predict, plan, and perform. And so the predicting is actually a proprietary assessment tool that we work with our clients to actually dig deep in terms of areas of vulnerability. And then, of course, then we do the planning process, which is obviously the plan. And then the perform is initially not actually engagements where we are dealing with problems, but actually in today's society, things move so rapidly that internal to companies, there's so much movement in terms of who would be responsible for various aspects of the plan. And so our perform starts with actually maintaining an ongoing relationship with our clients to actually update the plans on a regular basis when some event internally causes a change in personnel. And then also to test the plan, because sometimes people are put in roles, and then when an issue occurs, a business disruption or something, although they're tasked with certain things, if they haven't been through an exercise to know exactly how to connect with the other aspects of the recovery, then it moves much more slowly. So
that makes
so that's
perfect
what we do.
Sense. Yeah. I always say you always have to have a backup plan.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Out of curiosity, would you be able to give us just a simple example of what would be a predictable crisis?
Well, I would. I'll give you this first, and then I'll tell you more a more traditional type crisis.
Okay.
But our sort of the client that we're best known for was Virginia Tech.
Okay.
Back when they had the shootings there, we actually were brought in 3 days after that event, and we seamlessly worked with the faculty and with the Board of Trustees, and really developed all of the controls necessary to sort of bring the campus into a more positive environment, actually working with the local law enforcement agencies and with the media, et cetera. It was sort of funny that at that time, obviously, the media were looking for many ways to try to get stories, and we actually had a case where one of the media dressed up as a Catholic priest and went in and tried to get stories, you know, and we were able to sort of calm that and get the ship righted. So that's our high profile client. Right now, interestingly enough, we continue to work a lot today with private and secondary schools, private and independent schools, putting together campus security plans and protocols and things of that sort. Because, again, unfortunately, although the situation at Virginia Tech was almost 10 years ago, we are now seeing at the secondary school education level, you know, a lot of things going on there. So,
Absolutely. So
whether it's that or we have a number of clients where when we do the plans together, there's a primary focus on downstream supply chain issues. There might be things like workplace violence, as we would in the schools, or even things recently because of technology, the whole issue of social media. And, you know, what are your plans? What do you have proactively prepared to respond to things that may surface in social media, on Twitter or Facebook or wherever?
Absolutely, because what do they say? If it's put out there, it's really hard to get back.
It really, truly is. So, but sometimes people react, companies react sort of with a knee jerk, and that exacerbates the situation. So by having a plan in place that you address first to see exactly, you know, okay, let's step back. Because usually within the first 24 hours, the things that are out there are not necessarily true, or are not necessarily indicative of the depth of the problem. So
absolutely.
So we work with that.
Well, you know, I can see how that would be a very valuable service. I mean, especially with all the mediums out there and all the possibilities of how things could go sideways, right? You do want to be able to prepare.
Absolutely.
For that. I'm going to take us in a different direction, and
sure.
We obviously had the opportunity to see each other yesterday at the Southeast Franchise Forum luncheon, and as the executive VP and chief development, or I'm sorry, the head of chief, the board of directors, right?
Chairman.
Chairman, thank you. Okay. It's hard for me to tell you what you do, right?
Yeah.
but as the head of that, this is a big organization, SEFF, Southeast Franchise Forum, and if you wouldn't mind just elaborate and share with
sure.
our listeners, who is the Southeast Franchise Forum?
Great. Let me give you a little history, if I may. Let me go back to the late 80s. And Fred DeLuca, who's the founder of Subway, you all probably know that name. Fred was on the board of the International Franchise Association and suggested that in addition to having a national organization, it would be good to get franchisors, franchisees, suppliers together on more of a grassroots basis, more of a local basis. So the IFA, with his direction, created a program called the Second Tuesday. And the Second Tuesday was the second Tuesday of every quarter, first month in the quarter, second Tuesday. And it would be local franchisors just getting together for breakfast, lunch, or dinner and talking about local and state issues versus necessarily national issues.
Okay.
And so there were a number of cities that adopted that initiative, and Atlanta was one. And it was really born by franchise development and real estate executives, because those were topics that really were hot at the time. You know, how do you find real estate, et cetera, and
sure.
how do you grow the brand? And so there were half a dozen founders, including an attorney, Rupert Barkoff, with Kilpatrick Stockton.
Yeah.
And so that was the genesis of the Southeast Franchise Forum, which has continued and is the longest standing grassroots organization, local organization of its type in the country. The Second Tuesday continued for several years and died off. It's been replaced by a similar initiative that the IFA has called the Franchise Business Network, where, again, quarterly, they bring together in about 45 cities franchisors, franchisees, and suppliers to chat about local businesses. But the Southeast Franchise Forum grew beyond that, and we actually meet monthly.
Yes.
And we try to really mirror what the IFA does. We are driven towards the franchisors that are part of our group. We have well-known brands such as Starwood with all of their hotel portfolio, St. Regis and the Westin and Sheraton. We have Intercontinental Hotel Groups, which obviously the iconic Intercontinental Hotel, as well as Holiday Inn, their full portfolio. We have many of the food service brands that you would know. Zaxby's is one of us, Chick-fil-A. And then there's a holding group called Focus Brands, and we have all of their portfolio. And then we have some interesting other service brands. Firestorm, obviously, is a member, but also Any Lab Test Now, Clarissa Bradstock, that you know,
sure
okay,
do.
That she's the CEO. Not many people have heard of that. They don't probably know that there is a franchise out there where you can actually go as an individual and get any kind of medical test that will give you the same results as if you went to a hospital or clinic or whatever. And there are over 150 franchisees that she has. But anyway, that's an example of a smaller franchisor that's part of the group.
And that's a great example. And you've referenced IFA, and just for our listeners, that stands for International Franchise Association.
Correct.
And really the world's largest and oldest organization representing franchising worldwide.
Exactly. We're 55 years old. We just celebrated our 50th anniversary 5 years ago, started by Bill Rosenberg, the founder of Dunkin' Donut.
Oh, a lot of history here.
Yeah.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, for franchisors or suppliers that have an interest in getting involved with the Southeast Franchise Forum, what is the protocol? What would they do?
Yeah, essentially, again, we're a franchisor-driven organization. I think one of the reasons that we have succeeded where a number of other communities have not is that we always maintain a majority of the membership, and we actually do have a membership criteria rather than just show up at one of our meetings type situation. And we always want to maintain the majority of our members are franchisors. And so there's open membership for franchisors. Right. We also have franchisees, and I was would have been remiss if I didn't point out that we've got Aziz Hashim, who is soon to be the chairman of the International Franchise Association, who's based here in town. His company is NRD Holdings, which he has Popeyes, Checkers, and Domino's pizza franchises. And so he is a franchise, a large multi-unit, multi-concept franchisee, is also a member of SEF, along with David Barr, with PMTD Holdings, which is KFC and Taco Bell. So franchisors, franchisees, anyone that's in those categories, we would love to have them join us. And we really feel that for the emerging franchisor, we're the place to come. Yes. You know, we sort of give you a quasi-incubation type situation. As you know, franchisors and the franchise community in general, very open to embrace startup franchises. And so we encourage startup franchisors to join us as well. The supplier community is really complements and supplements and supports the franchisors and franchisees. But we do have a limit on supplier membership to ensure that the majority of the membership is always in the franchisor category.
Makes perfect sense. You want to have the appropriate balance there.
Yes.
Absolutely. And that makes me think of something else. You know, with the Southeast Franchise Forum, what's interesting to me is I really see that as a similar forum to what we're doing with Franchise Business Radio. And what I mean by that is, to your point, you are bringing together franchise professionals, franchisors, franchisees, franchise resources. It's just a face-to-face forum, and you meet monthly. And the value of connecting and learning from each other can be very great.
Yeah, it's amazing. And for me, it was easy. I'm kind of like Mikey. Actually, it was in 1992 when they asked me to be chairman, and I haven't stepped down since. So they haven't asked me to step down, although I've promised to retire this year. So this is my last year. And actually, Clarissa is the vice chair, and she'll be taking over as chairman. And hopefully they'll see fit to make me chairman emeritus or something like that. But really, it goes back to the IFA, because when I was with Arby's, that's when I joined, 1983, the International Franchise, I became involved. Arby's was obviously a member already. But I found that we could more than justify the cost of membership by the networking among our peers. Mm. And it was an opportunity to get together with other executives that were doing the same sort of thing, rather than necessarily reaching out to have to hire a supplier. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's clearly good to be able to have the interconnections among your peers. And so the Southeast Franchise Forum mirrors that. So I think, as you know, Pam, when you come, when you see the conversations that go on around the tables at lunch or breakfast, you see a lot of interaction between the franchisors sharing various and sundry issues that they might have.
Absolutely. And sort of a closing question here, because I would be remiss as a training consultant if I didn't ask you this. I need to touch on the topic of training and support. Obviously, it's a key advantage to someone becoming a franchisee is the ability to receive that training, receive that support from the franchisor. And with your deep experience, what have you found or seen franchisors doing to implement an effective training program?
Well, it's like anything else. It starts at the beginning.
Sure. Good point.
And so what you have to make sure is that onboarding training is deep. I think a lot of times there's a feeling from franchisors that they sort of need to give the franchisee sort of a basic experience, and then they can learn OJT on the job, you know. And I think that is one of the worst things that you can possibly do. So initially you need to have very deep training, and not only training in whatever the concept is, but also business training. Mm. You know, in my many years, the key thing that I've seen that has really caused angst early on with franchisees is the inability for them to grasp how to be independent business companies, organizations, you know, business managers, et cetera, in addition to being able to manage their concept. So the franchisor is always very good at being able to go in and help the franchisee be successful on the concept side. And so that's why we're working with a number of educational institutions. Georgia State, as you know, has just, Aziz Hashim actually has just endowed a chair at Georgia State to have a franchise as a subject matter within their school of business there.
I like that.
Yeah. And then just to carry that very quickly, I don't take a lot of time here, but then you've got to have the ongoing training. For example, at Firestorm, we every Friday have a one-hour conference call with all of the franchisees that can attend. Excuse me. And we record it. So for those that can, it's a webinar type situation, and it's all about what's going on within the franchise community, best practice, because, you know, training comes not just top down from the franchisor to the franchisees, but also among the franchisees themselves from a best practice standpoint.
Agreed. It's what I call peer exchange. Great value.
Perfect.
In that. Absolutely. Well, thank you, and wealth of knowledge. I could continue to ask you question after question, but we'll just bring you back on the show for that.
Well, it's such a privilege and honor to be here on the inaugural show, so thank you so much for that.
Absolutely. Jim, thank you for being our guest on the inaugural show. Would you mind sharing just real quickly, what is the best way to reach you if someone wants to reach you?
The office number is 678-892-4113. That is 678-892-4113 in the old radio voice.
Absolutely.
And the my email address, though, is always the best. jsquire, very simple, jsquire, S-Q-U-I-R-E, at firestorm.com.
Wonderful. Thank
you. Great, Pam. Thank you.
Pam, I think Jim's vying for my job right here. I'm a little nervous because he's stepping down this year. He's going to have some time on his hands. Yeah. Jim, it was awesome having you in the studio.
Oh, thanks, Rich.
Yeah, you did a phenomenal job. And Pam, wow, I think we're off to a great start.
Well, it helps to have wonderful guests.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely a key component. Speaking of wonderful guests, we have another amazing guest joining us in the studio. Back, Lawrence, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So you taking some good notes there?
Trying to.
I think this guy knows what he's talking about. Yes or yes?
Yeah, it's going to be kind of hard to follow up after that.
I'm glad I'm not in your shoes. Yeah. No, I know you'll do a phenomenal job. I was looking at your resume, and speaking of that, let's introduce Lawrence Leopold right now. So Lawrence, also 20 years in the business, but in experience in SBA lending.
Correct, yes.
Okay. And yeah, correct me if I'm if I misspeak here, but basically, formerly attorney for the U.S. Small Business Administration. After your time with the SBA, Lawrence, you worked with as the SBA credit officer and as an SBA lender at several banks in the Southeast. More recently, built the 50th. This is pretty impressive. 50th largest SBA lending department in the country for a large community bank.
That's correct. Yeah,
we did
$60 million in loans last year.
Well, game over. Now you're retired, right?
I wish.
Yeah. All right, so welcome to the show, and Pam, you're off and running. Here we go.
All right.
Guest number two.
Very excited to have you on the show, Lawrence. I know you and I have had a chance to work together in a training capacity. And, you know, for our listeners, if you don't mind, let's just kind of kick it off. We throw around acronyms very easily. SBA, what does SBA mean?
Yeah, SBA is Small Business Administration, federal agency, and they basically guarantee loans made by banks.
Makes sense. You make it sound so simple and easy, and I know it's not the case. But when we think about franchising, are there any specific franchise industries that really utilize or tap into those SBA loan funding options?
Absolutely. And excuse me, a number of the industries that Jim referenced, basically, you know, restaurant, food industries, hospitality, daycares, fitness centers, and other service industries. If it's franchised, I mean, you can do an SBA loan for it.
And I know to get an SBA loan isn't necessarily easy. Maybe you can provide a little few guidelines there. I know one question I have is does a franchise need to have equity to invest in a business?
Correct. And again, for those listeners, you know, equity meaning cash coming out of their pocket to go into the business. You know, can you get a loan without putting any of your own money into the opportunity?
And it's unfortunately one of those questions where it depends on a number of factors, and there's probably too many factors for the length of the show. But basically, you know, ideally most banks, and I want to sidestep here momentarily that I'm not trying to promote, you know, any specific lender. I want to just speak generically about SBA lending. So it really does depend upon the opportunity that the franchisee is pursuing, and it depends upon the lending institution that they approach for financing. But generally speaking, lenders do like to see some nominal amount of equity. I like to say 10% into the business. Usually on the smaller franchise opportunities, that can be as simple as paying the franchise fee out of pocket so that they've bought that right to start a particular franchise.
And could you walk us through, what is the process to get an SBA loan?
Basically, it's a matter of, you know, once you've identified that franchise concept, while in my years doing this, I've had individuals come to me at banks and say, you know, I want to start a franchise, you know, can I get a loan? And unfortunately, that's a little too soon for the bank to be involved. We want to see that they have a business plan. Ideally, again, that they've identified a concept and industry that they want to pursue. I'll use that opportunity to consult with them and sort of be give them advice on where they want to go. Because if it's someone who's called the bank and says, you know, I want to buy a hotel. And I'm like, well, have you ever worked in a hotel? Do you have any hotel experience?
I stayed at one.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Unfortunately, I have to try to discourage them from pursuing an SBA loan to acquire a hospitality franchise. So really, again, that they've identified a franchise concept, they've worked with the franchisor to put together a business plan. Ideally, once you've got the franchise documentation from paying that initial franchise fee, you can go in and start putting together cash flow projections on the business. You know, how is it going to work? Are they going to be able to repay a loan? And once they've put together a business model, put together a package, you can go out to a number of banks' websites, and they'll usually list the criteria that a bank wants to see. And again, it's the resume, it's a business plan, it's the last couple of years' tax returns. In that business plan is projections. That's just a good starting point to process an application and see if they're going to qualify for a loan.
Makes sense. And as you know, many franchisors register to be pre-approved for an SBA loan. And could you speak to that? Is there value around that?
Yes, there can be. There is a website that's partnered with the Small Business Administration, franchiseregistry.com. And it does list franchises that have been, air quotes, pre-approved by the SBA, meaning there's certain requirements that the SBA looks for. Again, the key word in the SBA acronym is small, and the SBA really wants to make sure that there's not a affiliation issue, that the franchisor has so much control over the franchisee's running of the business that franchisee is really more affiliated with the large business, and they're not really available to get SBA financing for when they're an affiliate. We want a small business, someone who basically has the right to profit or have a loss from the business. And so that franchise, by being on the franchise registry, it's an indication to the lending institution that this franchisee is not going to be have an affiliation issue or a size issue that's going to preclude that prospective customer from getting an SBA loan.
And to set, let's think about expectations, timeline expectations. If I were looking to get that SBA loan, what kind of timeline expectations should I have?
Sure. It depends. It depends upon the quality of the package that the customer is bringing to the bank. Again, you get, sometimes they come in and they piecemeal everything that you need. And it takes the customer 60 days to bring a complete package in, that obviously is going to delay the timing on an SBA loan. You, on the other hand, could have other customers that come in with a complete package to their lender, and you can get an SBA loan approved and closed and funded even within as little as 30 to 45 days. If it's a little more complex of a structure, where we've got commercial real estate, things like that, where we're requiring appraisals, environmentals, it adds some time. You know, 60 to 90 days is an acceptable guideline to plan on getting a loan.
60 to 90 days, realistic.
Yes.
So I'm just going to ask you that closing catch-all question for our listeners out there. Any lending advice, SBA or outside of SBA, that you would provide or give?
Gosh, I mean, again, that's kind of a loaded question. again, and that's why I'm here, is again, not to plug a specific bank. There's plenty of strong SBA lenders out there. You want to know that the lender that you're working with has experience doing SBA lending. A lot of people call themselves SBA lenders. But you ask them how many have they done, maybe they've only done 3 or 4 SBA loans. They're learning the process as they go, and that's not really fair to the customer. So, you know, again, while it's not bank driven, I think a lot of respects, and a lot of lenders I've worked with over the years, it really becomes relationship driven. And those franchisors know the lenders that have the experience doing the SBA loans for their franchisees, and they're the ones that are going to be recommended, because they're going to be out there in a consultative advisory approach, not just what an SBA loan tends to be, which is a transaction. Mm-hmm. A lot of times an SBA loan is just treated as a transaction, and you'll never hear from that bank again. Ideally, you want to find an individual lender that you can be comfortable with, who's going to be a partner with you as you grow that franchise. You know, one thing I would love to be able to see is that franchisee become a multi-unit franchisee, mm-hmm. And grow like the group that NRD that Jim referenced, where they own multiple franchises, because, you know, each one of those franchise opportunities for me is an SBA loan opportunity.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so I'd love to be able to see that relationship, because again, I've seen people that have, oh, I've got an SBA loan here, I've got an SBA loan here, and I've got an SBA loan at another bank. It's a transaction. So, you know, developing a relationship with that prospective lender who you're going to work with is key, and someone who has the depth and breadth of experience in lending.
That makes sense. So speaking of relationships, how can our listeners contact you?
Yeah, best way to probably reach me, I'm just going to go ahead and give everyone my cell phone number. It's 404-272-1478. Can't do the radio voice like Jim, but again, 404-272-1478.
Can we text you too?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Lawrence, yeah, it was great. And maybe for $1.50, Jim will loan you his radio voice, yeah, to read the phone number. Yeah.
Anytime.
All right. I have some follow-up comments, maybe during the open panel if we have time, about the SBA. We've had some folks in here, and either on or off the radio, I'd like to chat with you about that. But I did love, I think you're the only person that said the word air quotes on the radio without holding up, but just gave the verbal communication of that. That was classic, yeah. All right, so Pam, up next, you have your anchorman guest. We always call our final guest, you're the anchorman, Pete, by the way, in case you didn't know that, yeah.
Great.
All right, so Pete, is it Dosik?
Dosik.
Dosik, okay, 50-50 chance of that. So Pete Dosik is a recognized leader in franchise law. He's a Franchise Times Legal Eagle and former chair of the franchise section of the Georgia Bar Association. Pete graduated from Duke Law School in 1997. His background includes 5 years as in-house counsel to the Church's Chicken brand, operating and franchising more than 1,700 restaurants in 23 countries. Have you been to all 23 countries?
No, I didn't.
Least one, right?
They just stuck me in an office and made me push papers around.
Nice. All right. Pete, you and your partner, Kit Shipp, founded Shipp Dosik. Dosik.
Shipp.
Shipp?
Shipp Dosik.
I thought yeah.
Potato, potato.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. A boutique law firm focused on franchise law in 2013. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. Apologies to your partner and the mispronunciation.
I should have been more prepared to let you know ahead of time.
Yeah, to court me. All right.
No, so, I was going to say, I don't have Jim's radio voice, but I do have experience on the radio. When I was in law school, I had a radio show on WXDU, the Duke University channel, for the summer.
Wow.
Unfortunately, a tropical storm came through town, knocked over the antenna.
Ruh-roh.
So yeah, they had a temporary one on a smokestack somewhere and had a radius about a mile and a half of listenership. But
Short-lived show, huh?
It wasn't my long-term future there.
But you didn't bring a tornado with you this morning, did you?
No.
So we should be okay, yeah.
We're just happy you moved into law.
You could say he blew his business.
Nice, yeah.
Ba-bum-bum. Pete, sincerely, thank you so much for being on the show. Really, really excited to have you here, especially since you didn't bring a storm with you. And talk to us a little bit about franchising law, and specifically what I mean by that. Who do you service in the franchise community?
Yeah, I work with both franchisors and franchisees. Definitely something that people do need an attorney for. It's a very specialized and highly regulated area of law. The first thing people need to know is that at the national level, there is something called the franchise rule of the Federal Trade Commission, which governs all franchising. And then various states have their own laws as well. Georgia does not, but many other states do. So the big cost on businesses being in the franchise industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that kind of segues into, obviously, franchising is regulated on a federal as well as state level, depending on the state. And could you talk to us a little bit about what are some of the legal documentations that are out there that franchisors and prospective franchisees need to be aware of?
Sure. The fundamental document is what's called the Franchise Disclosure Document, or FDD. And basically, it's a disclosure of certain information about the business and about their legal contracts. And it is a one-size-fits-all document. So it doesn't matter if you're selling Hilton Hotel franchises or Firestorm. It's the same format. So it's a bit awkward in some places because it's a one-size-fits-all. And it's very driven by regulations. The job of the lawyer is really to make sure the FDD accurately reflects every little detail in the regulations. It's not a sales document. It's not something to make you look good. It's just, here's a bunch of information. It's long. It's boring. Flip through it.
Mm-hmm. And for all of you old-time listeners out there, what did the FDD used to be known as?
The UFOC, Uniform Franchise Offering Circular.
We always had some good jokes around that, didn't we?
When we transitioned a few years ago to the new national rule, there was some people tried to get it called the UFUD, but that didn't catch on. So mm-hmm. FDD is what people use.
Right, Franchise Disclosure Document. Elaborate a little bit more. Obviously, you said it's a uniformed, templated format that franchisors are required to fill out. Could you go into a little bit more detail of what items they are disclosing on and just the layout of the FDD itself?
Yeah, the interesting thing about the FDD is that the Federal Trade Commission doesn't tell you what you can or can't do with your business. You can charge whatever fee you want. You can have the terms be whatever you want. Some of the states regulate that, but the national government does not. So the FDD is purely about disclosing information that's relevant. So it starts off with an overview of the business. Goes into item two, which is business experience of certain executives. And interestingly, again, it's not a sales document. You just disclose very specific information about people, their title, and their last 5 years of employment history. And if you put in information that's not supposed to be there, some of the state regulators actually tell you to take it out. Mm-hmm. The FDD goes on to address various aspects of the agreement itself. One of the most important areas in the FDD is what's called item 19.
Oh, yes.
Item 19 is where if the franchisor wants to give the prospect any information about how much money can I make with this thing, it has to be in item 19. And if it's not anything in there, they can't talk about it with the franchisee. So it's a real frustration for everybody. That's really what the franchisee wants to know first and foremost, is how much, what do the financials look like. But the franchisors are often reluctant or limited in what they can or can't say.
Right. And actually, you're bringing up a really good point, because when I work with candidates that are considering franchise ownership, you're right, that's one of the first questions out of their mouth. And the most talked about item in the FDD is that item 19, that financial performance representation.
Yeah. And the purpose is, in theory, the purpose is to protect the prospective buyer so that they're not deceived or defrauded as to what they're buying into.
Absolutely. And really, it's my understanding that the FDD, it came out to really even out the playing field, right, between the buyer, prospective franchisee, as well as the seller, the franchisor.
That's certainly partly true, but you also get the sense of sort of the rules were definitely written by some people friendly to the franchisor industry.
Understood.
It could have been a lot worse.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Just looking at a franchise agreement as a prospective franchisee, what should I look for in a franchise agreement?
It's a long, complicated document, and it's definitely very one-sided. Sometimes when I'm looking at them for the franchisee, the only question is how one-sided is it going to be? Mm-hmm. The most important thing to remember, really the franchisor is going to control the brand. So they're going to make any decisions about, you know, if it's a restaurant, what's on the menu. And that may go with a lot of detail. Where's your supply chain? What are you getting? Where are you getting the menu items from? What uniforms do people have to wear? So everything about the brand presentation will be controlled by the franchisor. And it's a bit scary if the franchisee to sign up for that, because in theory, if the franchisor says, all right, paint everything pink tomorrow, you know, you're legally obligated to do that. Mm-hmm. A lot of it, you are trusting the franchisor that they're going to be reasonable and they're going to do things that will be in the best interest of the whole brand. And from the franchisor perspective, you need franchisees to be successful. If you're not keeping them profitable, you're going to have trouble in the long run or in the short run.
Yeah, I like to say it's an interdependency, right?
Right.
On some level. Are there any legal requirements around the franchisor's responsibility to train and support their franchisees?
The only legal requirements are whatever the franchisor puts in their franchise agreement. And again, it's going to be very one-sided. The FDD will have an item in item 11 in which they describe what their initial training program looks like, you know, how many hours on different items. But the franchise agreement would typically say that we will provide, they would put it on the franchisee to attend. It'll say the agreement says franchisee must attend whatever training we provide, but it really very low obligation on the franchisor legally to have to provide anything.
And as far as the layout of the FDD, when you're first getting that overwhelming document as a prospective franchisee, you know, the first half of that document is covering those 23 items, disclosed on 23 specific items. And then in the exhibit is the actual franchise agreement. Right. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so about two-thirds of the franchise, the FDD, will be exhibits, which include any agreement that the franchisee has to sign as part of joining the franchise system. So, and as the lawyer, to me, the franchise agreement is the heart of the matter. And that's where it will say, how long are you signing up for? One interesting thing people, you know, I didn't realize when I started with franchise, and it was a bit of a shock to me, was you can't quit. You know, if you sign up for a 10-year deal with your restaurant franchise, you have to operate for 10 years. Now, in the real world, that often isn't what happens, and people, you know, renegotiate or work things out. But it is a significant commitment from the franchisee.
So let's go to the other side, our franchisor. For a franchisor, what are the keys to success?
My philosophy on the key to success for franchising isn't necessarily a legal issue. I believe that if I go to any business owner and I say, you know, the key to success in your business is taking care of customers. You know, good, happy customers come back. They tell their friends. Unhappy customers don't come back. They tell people about the bad experience. And that's not a radical thing to say. Pretty much every business owner believes that, except a lot of franchisors don't realize they have two sets of customers. They need to take care of the people that come into their restaurant, hotel, or whatever, but also that they should treat their franchisees like their customers. It's unusual to see that level see that type of approach, but I think it's a real key to success. Just like that the person eating your restaurant, you want to keep them happy. The person who's the restaurant franchise owner, you know, if they're happy with their business, they're going to build more and they're going to tell other people when they hear who to join the system. If that franchisee's unhappy, they're not making money, they'll tell people don't join the system. They're not going to grow.
Absolutely. It's definitely an important part of the growth of the system is to have happy franchisees, right?
That's right.
Absolutely. And what is interesting, though, there is obviously a heavy responsibility on the franchisees themselves. And the hallmark of the franchise business operations is the actual system, right? That's what you're licensing.
That's right.
That proven business model. And sometimes I often share with people, you can have two franchisees in the same system, sitting in equal market opportunities, and one is doing really well and the other one's just kind of cruising along. So would you have any advice to the franchisee on what would help make them successful?
That's a great question. I think the most thing for the franchisee successful is realize it's on them, that they are buying into a system, they expect support, they should get support, they should have a system they can execute, but it is up to them to execute that system. So they, you know, at the end of the day, they don't want to be blaming someone else. They want to talk to other franchisees, find ones who are successful, and see what you can do to copy that. Get a franchisor who's got a proven system. The franchisor may have no legal obligation to provide training, but you want to make sure that franchisor does provide training. Find out from them and from other existing franchisees what they do to support franchisees.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you just, to your point, one of the most important steps is validating with those other franchisees and really asking the questions to get underneath the hood, right?
That's right.
Before you enter that agreement. Well, as a franchise lawyer, and I do want to point out, and you mentioned this at the beginning of this interview, the importance of, if you're moving into franchising, you want to make sure that you are getting a franchise lawyer, someone who specializes in franchise law. Very, very important. Where do you see you adding value to your clients?
For me, it's about more than just what is the minimum legal service. The compliance is a big important part to make sure that FDD is correct. But where we really like to add value for franchisors is helping them succeed, telling them what pitfalls to avoid. You know, for every time I help with a new franchisor, I always learn something new. But 90% of the challenges they face, I've solved before. So that's the advantage of an experienced franchise attorney, someone who knows the laws and knows kind of what's typical and what to expect in the industry.
Great. Thank you. Really appreciate you being on the show. And how can our listeners get in touch with you?
To get in touch with me, you can Google Franchise Lawyer Atlanta. I should come up first if I'm doing my job right. Our office number is 404-692-3654.
Say it again.
404-692-3654.
Super. And I know we're coming to kind of the end of our hour here. Rich, what would you like to do?
We'll definitely just open up some questions. And it's funny, everybody's repeating their phone number, trying to compete with Jim here. Whatever.
Yeah.
You started something there, Jim. Yeah. All right. I do have a couple of questions, but obviously want to, if the guest, I want to chime in as well, some cross conversations or questions. All right. I'll just start it off and then feel free to chime in as well. For each of the guests, for Pete, do you and Kit offer other services? Or I know you specialize in franchise law, but if someone, is there other areas of law that you offer? Or?
Yes, we're both legal generalists as well. That's okay. A good portion of our practice is providing a variety of services both to franchisors and franchisees. You know, it does help for us to have that specialty, but if right. someone is buying a franchise, we also help them form their company, negotiate a lease.
License and all those issues, yeah,
yeah.
related.
Yeah.
I definitely, I mean, it's concur with Pam. You definitely need, if you're looking at a specific type of business, don't go just to a general counsel, right?
That's right.
All right. And then, and we may have you on our AL radio, which is Atlanta Legal Experts radio show.
I would love to.
It's all law talk. Yeah. So I think we've had one franchise lawyer, but most of all, it's family law and all types of other, you know, issues related to legal issues here in Atlanta. Lawrence, speaking of the SBA, we did one or two SBA special episodes. We did with David Perry here in the Atlanta office.
Yes, no doubt.
And
David
we had, well. Yeah, I figured you do, and Cassius Butts.
Yes.
He's been here a couple of times. And then we had a guy, Eugene Cornelius. He's from the national level. It was a trip. He was literally, he's the like second in command for the entire SBA. He was in the White House that morning and flew in and was here in the studio that afternoon. So if we do another one, might have you. I don't want to hijack all your guests here, Pam.
I understand why.
Right? I mean, you definitely seem like a expert and in that industry.
Yeah, I'd love to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And for Jim, just a couple of questions on the Southeast Franchise Forum. How many members overall?
Yeah, we do membership by company.
Right.
So we have approximately 85 companies that are members. Generally, four people attend per company. So so we have a total sort of participant membership about 350.
Now, wow.
Jim, I know you limit the number of vendors and suppliers. Mm-hmm. So I've managed to crash a few of your events.
It's Kit's an old friend of mine, by the way, his partner.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a fantastic organization. They do great, great programs, and it's a great networking opportunity. And I've recommended to all my clients to join.
Thank you. Thank you.
So it's once a month, right?
It is.
It was yesterday.
It was yesterday.
Luncheon. How many people typically attend a luncheon?
About 100.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a great website, either SoutheastFranchiseForum.com, all spelled out,
right,
or an abbreviation of that is SEFForum.com.
That was my next question, is because I'm thinking, obviously, franchisees and franchisors are listening to this, and not just today and not just the podcast, but over time. And so I'm not sure if we had mentioned that earlier, but as if I was a listener, I'd want to know, that sounds like a great group I'd like to be involved in. How would I look to attend? So
Absolutely.
That's the website.
It's all up on the website.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got a couple of quickies here. I'd want to take a little bit of exception, Pete, from the standpoint of franchisees being customers of franchisors, because a wise man, Bob Gappa, who is sort of a guru in franchising, once said that customers always believe they're right. And that is not always the case in the relationship between the franchisor and the franchisee. So I set up the expectations that it's more a business partnership rather than a customer-type relationship. And I think that's basically what you're doing, is giving the opportunity for someone to come in partnership with you. And certainly there have to be all of the respect and all of the things involved in a business partnership. But so we typically look at our franchisees as partners rather than customers.
Yeah, and that's the most common approach of very successful franchisors. So I don't want to disagree with that. I do have a way to take that approach, but I do think adding, at least internally, a view of we're here to take care of the franchisees.
Absolutely.
And help them out.
Absolutely. It's got to be a synergistic kind of relationship. And then just quickly, there are preferred lenders. Is that correct? And when you're a franchisor, you want to, if you're in multiple locations where you have franchisees across the country getting various loans, is it good to be affiliated with a preferred lender who can actually make the calls?
Yeah. So that is one distinction. Most banks can be a generic SBA lender, and that means they have to submit the SBA application directly to the SBA for co-approval. A preferred SBA lender, a PLP SBA lender, has had that authority delegated to them by the SBA to make the credit decision on behalf of the SBA, and it does, in fact, reduce the time, but there can be scenarios whereby you do have to still send that, even if you're a preferred lender, do sometimes still have to send that package to SBA for concurrent approval. But yes, you want to identify lenders that are PLP. And actually, in this day now, a lot of the SBA PLP lenders have what's considered nationwide PLP status. So they can do loans across the country. From a franchisor standpoint, it would be great to have a lender that's comfortable making loans in all 50 states. But from a franchisee perspective, you're probably more apt to go to a lender that's in the market where you're going to be operating that franchise.
Great point. Well, I think we're going to have to close down this hour. So real quickly, I'm thinking we should just go around the table and allow everyone to provide, again, just their contact information.
Absolutely. Good idea.
And Lawrence, you want to kick us off?
Well, I was going to give Jim $1.50. Again, that's Lawrence Leopold, 404-272-1478. 404-272-1478.
Thank you, Pete.
Peter Dosik from Scheip Dosik Law. Dosik, D-O-S-I-K. And our number is 404-692-3654.
And Jim.
And Jim Squire with Firestorm and the Southeast Franchise Forum, 678-892-4113. In Georgia, that's 678-892-4113.
I was hoping his voice would crack or something. Yeah. All right, Pam, wow, and what a great show. And for you, how would people reach out to you, your website and contact information?
Absolutely. A couple ways to get to me. You can go to www.franchiseintellect.com.
And how do you spell intellect? I know you always say that. Yeah, people don't. Yeah.
INTELLECT. And you can also get to Franchise Intellect through franchisebusinessradio.com as well.
All right. Awesome. What a phenomenal show. Now you can take a deep breath, right? And relax. It was great. Great show. So we look forward to the next episode of Franchise Business Radio. See you next time.